Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Barrel to Bottle, the Binnie's podcast. I'm Kristen. With me is Roger.
Hey.
Pat.
Hey.
And Greg.
Hey.
Hi. All right, guys. So it's winter. What are we going to call this thing? We're going to call it Fire and Ice. We're going Game of Thrones, right? Are we going there? Or
I'm hot and cold on that title.
I like it. I like it. What do you think? Let's mull it over for a while while we talk about this.
Hey, let's put the title of the podcast on ice for now.
Okay. Oh, man. And that's it. That's our podcast. We're talking about mulled wine and ice wine, right? So you kind of want to do a hot and cold for the winter season, and two wines that are traditionally drunk during this time of year. People, I don't know if people even wonder, but there is a difference between, you know, mulled wine is the general category, but then of Glog and then Glühwein and so on and so forth. So there are
those
differences.
Are different.
I was like, ooh,
well, definitely different countries, right?
Yeah, different countries. That's kind of, but also different styles. And one thing,
there's one guy I know who's going to insist on the rules and the differences.
Yeah,
this guy right next to me, Roger Adams.
One thing I found was the inclusion of solids in the Glog. They put the nuts and the raisins in it. All right, so mulled wine, a wine beverage usually made with red wine, although white does exist, with mulling spices and, you know, like we mentioned before, sometimes raisins and dried fruit. Served hot or warm, very alcoholic, although non-alcoholic versions exist, but we're not here to talk about that on this podcast. And is traditionally drunk, of course, during this time of year, around the holidays, Christmas, and in the winter months.
So is it just like warm vermouth? What's the difference in how they make this stuff? What are the usual spices and whatnot in there?
So, I mean, kind of the usual suspects of baking spices. Of course, we use the cinnamon, the cloves, nutmeg, right? That kind of thing. So the allspice sort of thing. And then the difference, I think, is Glog is more the Scandinavian version. And the recipes I found for Glog were generally a lot headier and a lot heavier. So Glog, some recipes included port, a fortified wine, you know, very high in alcohol and super heady and super sweet, or even Madeira, you know, and then they would add included with port, then a claret, a red Bordeaux blend, or a Grenache. So they were doing kind of a dry table wine plus a fortified wine plus then brandy or, you know, anything. So, I mean, the Glogs are just like mulled wine on steroids, basically, I think is kind of the big difference. Glühwein, then, or glowing wine, is more in the German tradition. So a little bit lighter, where you're going to stick to, I think, more just the red table wine, and then the inclusion of spices, cinnamon sticks, orange peels, maybe we'll put tea bags in it, all kinds of things. So it's just sort of, that's, for me, from what I found, is the main difference between the two.
Picture having this on the stove. So the key is that when you're heating it, you don't want it to boil because you don't want to lose the alcohol. But with Glog especially, they're often adding hard alcohol to it. So that's one of the traditions with it where, you know, brandy's going in there. So it's really getting kicked up.
The recipe for Glog that I found, let's see, yeah. 4 whole cardamom pods, 1/4 cup of broken cinnamon sticks, 25 whole cloves, orange peel, 8 cups of port, 8 cups of burgundy, 1.5 cups of raisins, 1 whole cup of blanched almonds, 2 cups of sugar cubes, and 1 whole bottle of brandy.
That sounds like a spicy son of a bitch.
Yeah.
That's an old recipe because they said burgundy and they meant like California red. That's got to be an old recipe.
They could. They could have, yeah.
So which one of these are we trying first here?
This is a Glog.
This is a Glühwein's family?
Yep, this is the Vintervine, Von Glog, Glühwein's family winery and cellars.
So they make a sangria that's pretty popular too, right?
Yes, they do. In the same bottle.
Chicago-based?
I believe so.
Yep.
Paso Robles, California. So Glühwein's family winery is there, but I think the family itself is Chicago-based. Definitely has all that red fruit, and it's, you know, you can smell the alcohol in the nose. It's only 13.5%. I think the Glogs that people are making at home are probably way higher octane than this. I think this is like Glog light, like your
Roger,
introduction.
I'm sure you've had some very strong Glogs in your
big
life.
Oh, time, yeah.
this is strap in, boys.
This needs more sweet spices, and it's so citrus forward.
There's a ton of clove, though. There's a lot of clove.
Not more clove, but like more. I don't know.
More nutmeg, more cinnamon.
Yeah.
This is going to get you through February.
I think, you know, this is fine. I wonder if they make this so you add to it, like I said, you know?
I think that's kind of, I mean, most people I talk to in our stores in December who are looking for Glühwein or Glögg are buying the stuff just to take it home and doctor it up. They're, you know, they're heating it up on the stove. They're adding other
just
stuff to
make
it.
Make your own, man. That's what I think. It's so much more fun. It's cool. It's fun to do. And it's delicious.
We sell these little baggies full of dried herbs and spices.
When we can get them.
Yeah.
They're not easy to get.
Yeah. That's true.
But holy cow, do we deal with some angry Wisconsinites looking for...
Oh, God, nothing worse.
What's the batter? What's the Jerry Thomas batter? Tom and Jerry batter. Yeah, I'm just like...
Oh, man, that was a staple in my freezer as a child. I mean, all throughout the holidays, I remember opening the fridge or freezer and that being in there in my aunt's house or somebody's. Like, they always drank the Tom and Jerry. I don't know that I've ever had it, honestly. I think it kind of phased out.
The last time I saw the Tom and Jerry batter was when I was working at Buffalo Grove.
What is it?
It's real easy to make. That's something worth making if you're interested. It's basically sugar and butter, maybe some sweet spice.
So it's like not like a hot toddy kind of thing, or
that's what it sounds like.
It's kind of like a hot buttered rum.
Hot buttered rum. That's what I meant. Thank you. Yeah.
Awesome.
So we've got this Glühwein here. So the difference, like I said, Glögg is just more alcohol, more. You know. But what I didn't do for you guys is put the raisins and the dried fruit. What I should have done is stole some raisins from the panettone from this morning and sprinkle them in there for you.
The only way panettone can be improved.
Yeah, right. Is by dissecting it and putting it in another thing. So here we have this Glühwein. So once again, glowing wine, just lighter. The recipe I found was one medium-bodied red. They suggest a Spätburgunder, which is Pinot Noir, or a Beaujolais. 4 ounces of brandy, a third of a cup of extra fine granulated sugar, orange slices, lemon slices, cinnamon sticks, and cloves.
Yeah, you're back to Sangria Plus with that.
Yeah, is that what this is too, this thing?
Well, I mean, this is from Germany. This is more restrained. This bottle actually made it all the way from Germany to here.
Thank you, Germany. I feel like this has more spice to it.
Yeah.
It has.
I think it just has less citrus. I don't really think it has more spice.
That's possible.
To be fair, this would be better warmed up.
This is more what I'm...
Or ice cold.
When somebody says mulled wine, this is kind of the flavor profile that I think of.
It's pretty mellow.
How strong is this one?
10%.
Right on the money. 10%. What did we say? That one's 13.5, I think.
Mm-hmm. I like the bottle.
St. Christopher Glühwein. Grape wine with natural flavors. Oh, I bet they're so natural.
Like, I would actually heat this up on the stove, put it in a thermos or something, and you could take it, you know, out to a tailgate or other. There's other situations to I think drink warm mulled wine than just like, you know, a drunken family party with your aunts
dropping
and
your
uncles,
kids off at preschool,
getting through, watching your kids build a snowman.
Yeah,
you really should heat these up. I mean, we're testing them at room temp, and that's really kind of putting the stressors to them.
Why are you making us look like amateurs, Roger?
Heat them up and put some spices in there.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I think to his point, the pre-made, pre-bottled, you got to kind of give it some love.
You got to add to it.
So can we move on to part two of this podcast? Because this is fine. It has a time and a place. But this isn't what I'm looking for every day.
That's tight. Fine. But we've been baptized by fire. Now time to move into the ice. And we've got ice vine.
Cool.
Right?
Ice wine.
Ice wine, if you're from Canada, or ice vine, if you're making it in Germany. What's cool about this, and I think when a lot of people talk about dessert wines, you know, they think of the French style, they think of the Bocciatella styles, right? So the Sauternes of the world, or the late harvest wines.
Montbozziac.
Thank you. Oh, good job. Deep cut. That could be, and often are, affected by noble rot, the fungus that really gives this kind of marmalade, honey, tropical fruit, sometimes rye bread characteristic, and especially in Tokai, that I think is pretty common. I think when you get into the dessert wines, you get the Bocciatella styles. So I brought two for you. I brought the ice wine, and then I brought a late harvest Botrytis Riesling from New Zealand for y'all. Something a little bit different. So kind of akin to the falling from the German style, of course. These all kind of have their humble beginnings in Germany and sort of disseminated from there. And then for the ice wine, I brought the Jackson Triggs Niagara Estate Vidal ice wine. So it's made from a hybrid French-American grape variety of Vidal, which is very, very common for us to grow here in the States. So the difference is between ice wine and these more botrytis kind of affected dessert wines is that ice wine is supposed to show you kind of the purity of the fruit. So there's no mold, there's no nothing. The grapes were allowed to get so ripe, they made it all the way to the end of the season, that they're frozen on the vine. Now, they're all hand-harvested. So basically what this means is the harvest workers are harvesting in the middle of January at like 7 below or whatever it is. It's negative 20 or 20 degrees Fahrenheit or negative 7 degrees Celsius. And so instead of just carrying grapes, which is heavy enough, right, now you're carrying frozen marbles by the bucket load into the winery for pressing and crushing. Like, that's got to suck.
They're just picking them off grape by grape?
I think they're bunch by bunch at this point. Yeah. And they're crushed to stemmed, and then they're pressed. And now we've got, you know, all the technological advancements of pneumatic pressing and machinery. But back in the day, like in the 1800s, trying to make ice vine, it was pretty common that these frozen grapes would just like break your press. They would break your, you know, your crush machines because it just didn't, just couldn't handle it. So that's kind of like, that stinks.
That does stink.
Yeah.
Nobody wants their press broken.
No, they're expensive.
So how did these come into being? Was it like an early frost or something?
This is kind of the folklore. Basically in Franken in Germany, so one of the 13 wine-growing regions there in Germany, it was pretty cold in the late 18th century, and the winemakers were forced. They wanted to make some wine. Definitely in the monastic orders had to make wine. So they were just kind of forced to make wine out of what they had left, which were the frozen grapes. That's basically how it goes. And so wines from that vintage basically were super high in sugar, but very concentrated in flavor, because as you took away the water content via freezing, you were left with basically everything else that's in the juice, which is very high concentrate, super high sugar, and a luscious round mouthfeel. But these are made of Riesling, right? Coming from Germany. So one thing they had to balance that sugar was super high acidity. That's why Riesling's so good for dessert wines, is that high acidic backbone that goes all the way into super late ripeness, so late that the grapes are frozen. It's pretty cool. So that's kind of how it started, and the Germans started calling it ice vine, and then just kind of went from there.
Is it true that the ice crystals pull moisture out of the grapes and lends a bigger concentration?
Absolutely.
Sweet.
Okay, so after you crush and press, this is why, I mean, it costs so much. Some of these half bottles can be 50, 60, 80 bucks on the shelf, right? Only about 10 to 20% of the liquid of these frozen grapes is used to make ice wine, because everything goes away with the ice. So what you're left with is, yeah, super concentrated, resulting in a wine that's super concentrated, but all the water content's gone.
Right.
And so you've got such high sugar content as well, it can take months for these poor little yeasts to ferment this bad boy.
I'm surprised they actually get started. I mean, what do they end up being bottled at alcohol-wise?
So let's just take a look at the Jackson Triggs. This guy is...
I bet it's pretty low.
9.5%.
So that's pretty low alcohol with a high residual sugar.
The yeast just can't... I mean, with that much sugar in the soluble mixture, I'm surprised it doesn't choke the yeast out completely. That's some pretty hardy yeast.
It takes forever. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure they have to keep it going over the course of the months by adding yeast nutrients or so on and so forth to keep that baby rolling. So, yeah, it's out of control.
So this is cool. If you take a step back, like the ways to make hyper-concentrated wine, you can freeze it. You can use a fungus to grow on it to pull out the moisture. You can let it sit out in racks to dry. Right?
You freeze it or you dry it. That's basically it. You know, that's kind of what we're... Or you centrifuge, you filter, you get the water content. If you want to
do
that kind
of
thing.
But none of that's traditional.
No. So naturally, we're talking about evaporation by whatever method or freezing. Much easier to evaporate, let it dry in the vine, let the mold desiccate it. That's still kind of an evaporative sort of process because the water content is eliminated that way. So here is the ice wine. So this is made of Vidal, a hardy hybrid grape that's grown in Canada and in the United States. Basically best known for ice wines out of Ontario and various areas. So it's just kind of really what it's known for. It does make pretty decent dry table wine.
Is this Niagara?
This is Niagara. Yeah, Niagara Peninsula.
All right, so VQA. Like dumb Americans, right? We all think like, where in Canada could that be? We know where Niagara is, but really, we talk about Finger Lakes wine in New York State, and it's really the same region. It's
same stuff.
Just on the other side.
Yeah.
And because of the Finger Lakes, they're able to grow wine there. So it, you know, it moderates the temperature enough that the vines can prosper and can produce grapes well into the fall without being too cold and freezing, because frost is a major issue. Frost kind of bookends the season there, and so the grapes, the vines are concentrated around the water in order to make sure that we can even have a harvest.
Yeah, and the water stays pretty cool, I think, in the Finger Lakes, right? I think they're very deep glacial lakes.
It is, but it definitely doesn't freeze and keeps the air moving. So it'll keep the grapes clean. So it'll mitigate any kind of mold issues, but also then will promote healthy grapes getting
it. No powdery mildew.
No powdery mildew.
No botrytis in this whatsoever?
I don't smell any. But ice wines traditionally are not botrytis affected. They're pure, clean, unadulterated in the sense of botrytis versions of dessert wine.
I feel guilty for liking this as much as I do, mostly because I need to lose weight. And this is a sweet wine. Holy cow.
Oh, it's syrup.
Yeah.
What kind of glassware is this typically served in, and how much do you pour?
Yeah, I was going to ask that question, too. Did George Riedel make a very expensive glass for ice wine?
Oh, you bet your bottom dollar, man. Because ice wine is also made very popularly in Germany, Austria, in the Botrytis Belt and around those areas.
The Botrytis Belt.
Burgenland.
Classic.
So, yeah, I'm going to make one. It won't last long, but anyway...
you gotta punch new holes in the
Let it go.
Let
it go.
These are not that funny.
Press new holes. So it'd be more like a copita, Roger, like what you would serve sherry in, I think, primarily. But I'd have to confirm on the Riedel site. But there's most definitely an ice fine glass. That's not even just the Copita for sherry, but more or less something
small. It's probably slightly different than the Sauternes glass.
Yeah, right, just like by a nano degree.
Enough to justify another $60.
Yeah. So, you know, small glass, because these wines are very delicate in aroma, and it would definitely be tulipped to concentrate the aromas in the top of the glass, is my guess.
I'm so hungry. You want to talk about food pairings?
What do you guys think? I think stinky-ass cheese, man.
Stinky cheese, roasted almonds.
Yeah.
Something with some salt to go with the sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And fat.
This would be good with fried chicken. Spicy fried chicken and ice wine would be awesome.
Doritos.
Like the hot from...
You think that spicy would be good with it?
Yeah, sweetness with spicy.
Okay.
Yeah, regular would be awesome too. Yeah. With a little bit of spice to it. What's the place on Armitage? That's Grit Parsons, man. They've got the best hot in the city. Calling it.
How about buffalo wings?
I love wings.
You know, your hand would slide up and down the steps.
Yeah, right.
So, Jackson Triggs, we're trying the Vidal. They make a Riesling, which is pretty popular. Also, there's a Cab Franc. I've never had it, and I'm really interested in that.
I went to pull one. I couldn't find one in the city.
That's too bad.
And I want to try one.
That seems
so cool, it's a
right?
unicorn for me. I still haven't tried a Cab Franc ice wine.
So, it's so easy to imagine. Like, Riesling is kind of fruity and naturally sweet on its own, and it has acidity to balance.
This is a botrytis nose.
Cab Franc isn't, and it tends to be, like, especially in cold climates, Cab Franc gets, like, green pepper and this austere focus.
Yeah, but think about what's happening. That Cab Franc is so ripe. Right?
It's been on the vine for so long.
And it's got sun from, it's a relatively sunny area, and it's also got the reflection, you know, off the water, da da da. So I have to guess, I've not tasted one, right? Like I just said, so I'm just guessing that a lot of those pyrazinic sort of aromas of the green pepper have dissipated, and we have more bright red fruit on that than anything.
We got to try it. Yeah. We got to try it sometime.
It can't be too stocky because it's so darn ripe. Has to be.
So cool. All right, what do you got now?
So this is the Huya Marlboro Botrytis Riesling. So this is basically a new world copy on an old world German style of a Baron-Aufschlösser or a Trocken Baron-Aufschlösser. They come in the same kind of brown flutes like this and yellow labels, very common, like J.J. Prüm especially, right? So it's kind of like a total copy of that. And
Huya.
I love Huya. And so, yeah, I mean, it's awesome. So what we're looking at, down in Marlboro, down in New Zealand, maritime climate, relatively cool constant temperatures. You know, they don't get much higher than 60, 70 degrees during their summer months, whatnot. And it really doesn't change. There's no big diurnal shifts. It's like 68 during the day, and it's like 55 at night, then back to 68 and 55. And so with the maritime climate, that consistent cool temperature, so you get long, cool, even ripening. But also with maritime, you can have humidity. So you can get botrytis that readily kind of affixes itself to the grapes and desiccates them in various areas.
This tastes boozier to me. What's the strength on this thing?
This guy is 11.5.
Okay. It's not that big of a step up.
A normal Sauternes, though, is about like 13, 13.5, dude. Yeah. So those are actually... But do you feel how, if you go back and forth, how much rounder and viscous this is? This is part to the botrytis rot, the way that it affects it. It gives that round, rich, velvety feel.
I think the booziness that you're perceiving is actually the botrytis qualities. Because it's not, it's not like alcohol, it's more like a slightly chemical. You said rye bread, and that's true, but it's like when rye bread starts to taste a little bit like Clorox, like that's kind of a botrytis-y note.
That's it. A kind of bread you eat.
It's a thing. It's a thing.
See, I get the honey, I get the marmalade, but I get that classic little, not as much as Sauternes, but I get a little bit of saffron. I always do from botrytis.
There's a mustiness to it that I assume is the botrytis.
Yeah, sure. But go back and forth to the ice vine.
It's so rich.
Sure.
It's so rich.
See how clean and crisp it is compared to the botrytis? The botrytis just has that kind of very heady, round, rich sort of feel. Need that ice wine again?
You know, I never thought I would agree that this ice wine was crisp, but truly next to this, it is crisp. And I wouldn't have believed that without tasting it.
But it's a lot leaner, you know, a lot higher acidity.
Mm-hmm. And it's not as round, and it is, but it's still so rich, but it comparatively, it's lean and crisp.
Right, yep.
Unbelievable. Yep. Really cool.
How do you feel, Raj?
I'm having trouble getting past. They pick up kind of a solvent-y character to these on the nose that is kind of off-putting
to me. It's that Clorox bread.
The first time I ever had Tokai was in a class, and I was like, it was a bunch of experienced wine managers and me, and it was like 2008, right? So I don't know what I'm talking about. Because I'd never experienced anything like it. And I'm like, this is flawed, man. This is flawed. And they're all like, no, that's just the quality of the botrytis that comes along with the heavy sweetness. And eventually you'd kind of grow to appreciate it.
I don't know. I don't really get that.
It's bringing
me
back to elementary school with the jars of rubber cement. Do you guys get the reference to this name? I think that's kind of cool.
No.
That's a famous extinct bird.
Huya?
The feather is the story about the Maori warrior king giving the single feather.
I know a lot about the birds of New Zealand, and I've never heard of a huya. Like, I know like a disturbingly a lot about New Zealand. I've never heard of a huya before.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was a bird that's extinct now.
The kia,
that the Maori king gave to the feather to whom? His
like
firstborn
the
child? Their imperialist
British monarch. Yeah. Okay. Oh, your imperialist overlord.
Yeah, right. Makes sense. Here's a feather. Suck it.
The huya is an extinct species of New Zealand wattle bird endemic to North Island. Last confirmed sighting was in 1907, although there were credible sightings as late as the early 1960s. It's got a long curved bill, at least the male does.
So anyway, there's our Fire and Ice podcast, you guys. Mulled wine and ice vine.
Ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to the Q&A portion of today's Barrel to Bottle podcast. Write your questions to comments@bennys.com via email or hit us up on social media @BennysBev on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Craigslist.
So, Pinterest.
And if we answer...
Missed connections.
If we answer your question on the podcast, you will win a $20 Benny's gift card. Kathy in Evergreen Park writes, I see you guys sell a lot of different kinds of wine glasses. Does it really matter what wine glass I use to drink different wines?
Kathy in Evergreen Park, the... Hard answer is yes. The shape of the wine glass will drastically change the way that the wine appears in the nose and actually on the palate. But at the end of the day, I think whatever glass you want to use is just fine.
Kristen, what glass do you drink from at home?
I have a few different kinds. I have a Bordeaux glass or a Burgundy glass. I have an Oak Chardonnay glass, and I have a white wine glass. I've got more generous round flutes, and my everyday is the Schatz Fiesel.
Where do you keep them? Like, are they close at hand?
Well, so some of them that I keep. So I have some more collectible glasses, different sorts of anniversaries of Riedel. I have the Riedel 40th anniversary, Somme series, Burgundy glass. I have the same line in the Syrah. It's like 115 bucks a glass, and that stays in the box up in my pantry.
Right,
so, and only when people that come over I know can afford to replace it get to drink out of it.
So I got a whole bunch of the different Venom series. So I got the Burgundy and the Bordeaux and a couple like the Sauvignon Blanc and the Zinfandel. And they stay in the boxes. And the ones that I tend to drink from are the less expensive Venom, or not Venom series, the step down, the Overtures.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I got this right here, the Venom Bordeaux, or the Overture Bordeaux, because it's a big bowl and it's bulletproof.
Yep.
And then I have the Sauvignon Blanc / Zin glass of the same line, because it's a smaller bowl. And like between those two, that's literally all I ever need.
Yeah, I have six of the Schatz Fiesel, just normal larger ones that I just are my everyday glasses. And then I have two of each of those, kind of the Venom line. And then I have others in the basement. I have a bunch, but they're just kind of packed up. And
so, Kathy, if you want to be as down to earth as this pair,
no, like, I don't even have fucking cash. Here's the deal. So,
are you kidding?
When I was listen. When I was a wine consultant, we had Riedel come in and we did a side by side comparison with the big gloppy Libby glasses.
It's a thing, man.
And it really brings the nose out in the wines. And when you compare different crystal glasses side by side, the shape of the bowl really affects the nose. But then the question is, are you splitting hairs and do you care that fine?
No,
fine.
The answer is no.
No. But you do want to get yourself to a glass that's good enough that the experience that you're getting is optimal.
Yep.
Without, you know, being as pretentious as me. And I do drink my beer from a frosty mug.
Yes, folks, that's right. The same person that has Venom series, or whatever the hell that means, drinks Venom out of a frosted schooner.
Yeah. Pat, what kind of freaking animal skins are you drinking out of in your village?
You know, young goat only.
The can with the hole punched in the bottom.
No, I really just have stemless wine glasses, stemless wine glasses that double as wine glasses for me and rocks glasses for spirits.
Here's the deal.
Beer glasses, I like just using a nonic pint, like an anonic imperial pint.
I like this.
Or like a stemmed 16-ounce tulip.
Sure,
which
those
is
are great.
Kind of like, you can get them cheap. Like like every year we give away or sell like Hop Slam ones and Revolution ones and, you know, any of those stemmed tulip giveaways that we offer with beer purchases throughout the year. Those are worth having on hand. If they break, who cares? Wait until the next six-pack goes on sale with the free glass. You know?
I think the thing that people look for, no matter what glass you use, you just want to get one good, you know, set of glasses, but look for the thickness of the glass. The thinner the glass, the better it is for the wine.
Yeah. One thing to never, ever use is fancy-looking glassware with, like, the metal rim. That's terrible, and it definitely throws off taste of stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, lick the rim and then try to taste whatever's in the glass, and you won't be able to taste anything but the metal.
Right, that's something.
You know, like, it makes a Chimay beer glass chalice look awesome, but it makes Chimay taste like crap.
Garbage, yeah.
I will always have the stemless.
Yeah.
If it's a cocktail, it's fine because there's ice, but there is really something to your hand warming up the wine, and that
for sure.
Throws
I have some glasses, too. They really only get taken out at, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas.
But at the end of the day, just enjoy yourself. I mean, I know that's the default answer, but that's how I feel.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. You know what? And these answers, like, that's only if you really are deep.
I mean, the truth
is, if you're drinking glue wine, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, long answer matters.
Drink it out of a mug.
Drink it out of a jam jar. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It matters if you have whatever you're drinking. It doesn't matter.
Roger, you...
Most pretentious Q&A ever.
I haven't seen Roger this grumpy since the 4th of July podcast when he stormed out. Remember that?
Yeah. What did he say? I got to write the beer buzz.
I got to write the beer buzz.
What a grouch.
When you guys play this back, you'll hear how it sounds. He's laughing because he knows.
Kathy's question was, does it affect the way the wine smells and tastes? The answer is yes, different glassware does. But do you have to get all huffy-puffy about serving the right thing, da-da-da? And for me, the answer is no. But for some people out there, The answer is still yes. Yeah, and not, all it's of not... it's cool. And it's just glassware. Sometimes it's a hard Tuesday and I just drink out of the bottle, y'all. All right?
It's, you know, not etiquette. It's experience. Right?
Yeah.
All right. And Kathy, don't drink out of the bottle, you
Kathy.
Animal.
Oh. Crazy straw.
Kathy, I hope you enjoyed this $20. Please buy anything but glasses after this freaking mess of an answer.
Yeah, right.
Enjoy yourself.
Everybody else can write their questions to us, and we'll yell at each other about them at commentsopinions.com.
To be fair, email. Roger will yell at the rest of us about them. Yeah.
Check out pictures
of glassware lawn.
Check out pictures of Roger's beer of the week on our Twitter account at Benny's Bev and Instagram at Benny's Bev. Check us out on Facebook. Hit us up with your questions for your chance at a gift card.
You guys, I enjoyed this Fire and Ice episode.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the sweet wines.
Sweet, sweet wines.
Vintage dated sweet wines. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your attention, listeners. Thanks for your attention, friends. Really appreciate it. As always, I'm Kristen.
I'm Greg.
I'm Pat.
I'm Roger.
Keep tasting.